The Baseball Tonight podcast is presented by LinkedIn Jobs.
Way out of here. Oh,
goodness. This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, May 5th, 2021. Producing from his home in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, back in my home studio in New York. And today is the birthday, Taylor, of a close friend of mine, Greg Burrow, who went to Vanderbilt with me. And part of our friendship foundation is built on this.
And look who's coming up.
It was Kirk Gibson, 1988 World Series. I was a huge Dodger fan, hanging on every moment of that World Series game in 88. Kirk Gibson had gotten hurt. You didn't know if he was going to play. He sent up as a pinch hitter. And right at that moment, Greg called me. And I can't even remember where he was. I was in Nashville. And we just started talking about it. We stayed on the phone through that entire plate appearance. And then this happened.
Waiting on deck, but the game right now is at the plate. High fly ball into right field. She is gone.
Kirk Gibson hitting the home run, and I was screaming into the phone. And Greg, who was a Red Sox fan, he was screaming into the phone. And Taylor, that's the cool thing about baseball, is it connects people in moments like that one.
Oh, I love that story. I don't have any top of mind right now, but I'm sure I have many similar stories. You know, that's what sports does, man. That's why we do this. We love it.
Exactly. So happy birthday to Greg. Some news and notes before we talk to Dave Schoenfeld and to Paul Ambikides. New York Mets ace Jacob DeGrom was scratched from Tuesday night's scheduled start against St. Louis because he was having trouble getting loose as he started to stretch ahead of his outing. Luis Rojas said DeGrom had a scan that showed inflammation of his lat, back muscle that connects the upper arm to the spine and the hip. DeGrom won't throw for a few days. He was not placed on the injured list. Pete Alonso and Francisco Lindor learned from phone messages that the Mets had fired hitting coach Chili Davis and assistant Tom Slater. Alonso said he was emotional after hearing the news about Chili being let go. Cleveland Reds pitcher Amir Garrett was suspended 7 games and fined an undisclosed amount of money for inciting a benches clearing incident with Chicago Cubs on Saturday afternoon. That announcement from Major League Baseball on Tuesday. Javier Baez, who had to be restrained on the field, was fined. Braves, Nationals. And there was a guy who was doing his best Shohei Ohtani impression.
The one pitch. Fastball swung on and hit well to center field. Retreating Robles at the wall. It's gone! The grandest of all home runs for Waskar Noah.
Waskar Noah. He was terrific on the mound. He was great at the plate. His second home run this year. And oh, by the way, he'll be pitching on Sunday Night Baseball this weekend against the Philadelphia Phillies. The Phillies, who had that debacle of a loss on Sunday night, well, they won again last night with help from Andrew McCutchen.
Out towards center field. On the run is Bradley Jr. Out to the wall, and it's gone! Center field home run for Andrew McCutchen. And just like Sunday night, he has a first inning home run.
And he hit a third inning home run as well. McCutchen, that call coming courtesy of Tom McCarthy on the Phillies television network. Yankees and Astros, that was the big focus yesterday. Is the Astros' first game in Yankee Stadium since the decision on the sign stealing scandal came down. Of course, no fans in the stands last year and no interdivision play. And so Jose Altuve came to the plate for the first time, and he was not welcomed by Yankee fans.
Here comes Altuve.
Yeah, Carl Ravitch on ESPN, and that was the polite part of the response. I think, Taylor, you would agree with me. There were a lot of boos. It got a lot worse after that. I can tell you that when there were, I don't know, you know, because I live here in New York, I didn't see the ESPN feed on this. I got the Yes feed. There were a lot of chants that you couldn't replay. That's how I'll say it.
Oh, yeah. And I love that we just played like 15 seconds of continuous booing. That's pretty impressive by the Yankees fans. I'll give them that.
And they kept it up all night. The Astros took the lead in the bottom, in the top of the first inning when Alex Bregman hit a home run. In the bottom of the first inning, Giancarlo Stanton answered back.
Pitch swung on, there it goes, deep left field. That ball is high, it is far, it is gone. A Stantonian home run, a high drive to left, and into the seats for a Yankee lead.
John Sterling and WFAN. The Yankees blew the game open in the bottom of the sixth.
0-2, two out pitch, slow roller. Bregman, tough play, not in time, and it gets past Gurriel at first. LeMahieu will go to first and stay there. One more run comes in, and that ball is dropped at the plate, and safe at the plate is Odor.
Yeah, and there are questions about Odor and whether or not he injured his left knee. He was sent for examinations after the game. Martin Maldonado also taken out of the game, the Astros catcher. Maldonado, it looks like he's going to be okay. We'll find out later today about the severity of Odor's injury. The Yankees win this game 7-3. But, of course, the conversation after the game was about the fans' reaction. Here's Astros manager Dusty Baker.
Nothing surprised me. You know, at least there wasn't any violence. I mean, you know, they can say whatever they want. Sound like a packed house tonight, even though it wasn't. And you know, we kind of accepted. I mean, we kind of expected that, you know, reception. And so we'll probably get more of the same tomorrow and the next day.
Here's Dusty talking about Jose Altuve.
You know, they were extremely hard on you know, Altuve. You know, tonight the fans were. That has nothing to do with it, but. You know, like he's exerting, you know, a lot of effort, you know, maybe too much effort.
He did not look comfortable. We'll be talking about that coming up with Dave Schoenfield and with Paul Embiidkes. Aaron Boone, the Yankees manager, spoke about what felt like a playoff atmosphere.
Felt like a playoff atmosphere. I mean, amazing 10, 12,000 fans, whatever are in there. You know, the energy that was created, we haven't seen that since, you know, 2019. So it was definitely an energetic crowd, and they expressed themselves.
Now, before we get to David Hembo, ESPN Films' latest documentary, 144, takes viewers inside the WNBA's unprecedented 2020 season. It's a story of a condensed season entirely in a bubble where 144 players across 12 teams not only came together to play basketball, but also to dedicate their season to social justice. 144 premieres May 13th at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN. The film will be available on ESPN Plus immediately after it airs.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11 ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
Welcome to the show!
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show, mate.
Welcome to the show. Whoa!
Welcome to the show, baby.
You're in the show with David Schoenfield.
David Schoenfield, who covers baseball for ESPN. And Dave, good morning. I'm going to warn you, before the end of this segment, I'm going to compliment Angel Hernandez.
Well, that would be a first, that's for sure. In a year of questionable umpiring, he's usually at the top of that list.
I think I'm going to win you over. This is going to be like you and I are going to form the Angel Hernandez bandwagon after I pull you over to my side. Would you think that's possible as we get started?
I'm curious to see how you can do that.
I said skepticism. You know, not quite as much skepticism as was aimed at the Astros by Yankee fans last night. And boy, I'd love to play everything that we heard last night in the Bronx to get you a feel for it, but we can't because the FCC would take this podcast off the air.
Yeah, man, when Jose Altuve let off the game, boy, did he hear it.
Yeah, he heard it. Let's just say that the most popular letter in Yankee Stadium last night was the letter F. Okay. and he heard it. And I, did shows this morning. And I basically said, if you're the Astros, welcome to the rest of your baseball life. Because nothing that you do moving forward changes anything that happened in 2017, 2018. This is part of your baseball legacy. What did you think?
Yeah, no doubt. And hey, look, there were 10,850 last night, and it sounded like 50,000. So huge props to Yankee fans because they were loud. They were, as expected, obnoxious. And I thought it was kind of fun, to be honest. Having fans in the stands, the Astros getting what they should have got last year, which they escaped because of the pandemic. And yeah, you're right. This is not going away. And anytime soon and maybe never.
Now, Dusty Baker did an interview with USA Today beforehand in which he basically said in so many words, boy, everyone should just move on. Like, he doesn't understand why everyone is just not moving on. You know, most of the guys from that 2017-2018 are on other teams now. And I disagree with Dusty about that. Like, that's not going to happen. But I always love to listen to Dusty when he speaks about issues because he brings such perspective. Like, he was in the on-deck circle when Henry Aaron hit career homer number 715, and he was well aware of what Aaron was going through at that time. So to hear Dusty after the game last night basically say, you know what? The good thing is there was no violence. And after that, they can say what they want. I thought that was exactly how he and the Astros should handle it.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, it's not like Anaheim where somebody threw a garbage can on the field, so you don't want fans to do any of that. You don't want this to turn into Yankee Stadium in the 70s when you're throwing batteries and stuff on the field. So have fun, but be a good fan. Boo, bring your garbage can, pail, fake signs and all that. But keep the violence down. And that goes for the players on the field as well. And I think the players have moved on much more than the fans. I don't know if you'd agree with that. But Altuve, Bregman, Correa, as long as they're wearing that Houston uniform, they're going to keep getting it.
I wish I could remember the question that was asked of Aaron Judge before yesterday's game, but he essentially was like, should you guys all move on past this? And there was this pregnant pause that was like, a pregnant pause with like triplets where you could see him processing that question. And he didn't say, nah, it's not a big deal. I've moved on. And I think there are a lot of players who are going to feel that way. On the other side, I would say this. I thought Jose Altuve was bothered by it last night. I thought he was bothered last year by the whole conversation. It felt like every time he made an out, he sprinted off the field like he didn't want anybody to notice him. And, Dusty acknowledged after the game that it looked like he was expending a lot of energy. And on the other hand, I don't think Alex Bregman is bothered at all. In fact, I really believe since this whole thing happened, nobody on the Astros has handled this whole situation better than Bregman, who I think realized early on, you know what? I'm not going to change anybody's mind. I like Carlos Correa a lot, but you remember last spring how he came out and he did those interviews and he was trying to make the case and, yeah, and he felt like going, dude, you're never going to convince people. All Alex Bregman has done, on the other hand, is just go and play. And so he comes up in his first plate appearance and he hits a home run and he answers that way.
That's the only way to do it. It's to put the numbers up on your baseball card, right? Because if you don't, that skepticism is only going to increase. And Altuve, we know he struggled last year, got off to a good start this year, but after going 0-for-4 last night, he's down to 247. So those concerns about who he is right now as a hitter, still are there. Bregman, he's hitting. Correa's doing okay. So those guys at least are backing it up with the numbers.
How the Yankees fans handled this last night got a lot of attention. SportsCenter, Get Up. That it's going to be a conversation in other cities than New York. I really believe that this is, it's almost like Yankee fans are going to inspire fans with other teams. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. You know, especially as the summer unfolds and the stadiums get closer to regular capacity, the fans that haven't had that chance to boo Houston, they're going to go spend their $15-$20 to get out to the ballpark and let them have it.
All right. Yesterday, we found out that Jacob deGrom was scratched from his start. He was examined. He was not put on the injured list. What Luis Rojas, their manager, told reporters yesterday was that he's got some lat stiffness and he's going to be backed up a few days. That's the best case scenario for the Mets. On a scale of 1 to 10, what would be your level of concern at this point?
I guess I'll put it as a 3, because if they were concerned, he'd be going on the injured list, right? So until that happens, I'm going to say it's not a serious deal and they're just being overly cautious early in the year. You don't want to push anything. So let's hope that's the case, because we know we've had way too many injuries across the sport so far.
I would agree with you. And I think that early in the season that the Mets reflex would be to protect DeGrom as much as possible. Right. So if they got back information yesterday that was even mildly concerning, I think they would have shut him down, put him on the injured list. And especially with the National League East, as close together it is, it's not like someone's going to run away in that division the next 3 weeks. But, you know, that all said, in terms of not panicking, we did see the Mets the other day fire their hitting coach, Chili Davis, fire their assistant hitting coach. And you know, the more that I talked to about this with people yesterday, various sources, I heard the same things that Joel Sherman was hearing, that there was concern within the Mets organization, even going into spring training, about whether or not Chili Davis was a fit. And my answer was, then the Mets, in talking with people yesterday, was like, well, then they should have fired him going into the year. They should have fired him during the wintertime. You know, Chili opted out of the 2020 season because of concerns about coronavirus. The Mets hitters thrived over those 60 games. The new front office came in. Zach Scott was with the Boston Red Sox when they fired Chili, so he knows Chili's approach. He knows, you know, that Chili probably is more old school than he is into analytics. And based on what I heard yesterday, you know, they were kind of wondering about that. Now, I know that it was a very busy Mets offseason because they were pursuing players, and Jared Porter, who was supposed to be general manager, got fired. And so they're scrambling. But to me, this kind of screams of like a manager calling on a relief pitcher, expecting the relief pitcher to fail. Like, you could have handled this differently. If you had projected ahead and said, boy, if we struggle in the first 23 games, then we might fire the hitting coach. You should have done something in spring training. What do you think?
Yeah, it makes sense. And I know you and Jessica kind of said what I'm about to say yesterday, which is, you know, you hearken back to Chili's, what, 1 year when he was the Cubs hitting coach, and he kind of got let go there for the same reason, that he's viewed as too much of an old school, you know, just put the ball in play, not worrying quite so much about launch angle. But yeah, the bottom line is you can't fire a guy 1 month into the year, you know. So it, like you said, why didn't you do this in the off season? And maybe the plan was to let Jared Porter hire his coaching staff, and that blew up and they didn't have time to readjust with the changes in the front office. I don't know. It's just a weird move. And then, of course, you had the players the other day talking about their who was it? Donnie Stevenson, their fake hitting coach. I know they were making a joke, you know, about the whole idea. Oh, we got to have the right approach. But you know, I don't think that helped necessarily either, because the next day, you know, Chili Davis was let go. Look, bottom line, the Mets aren't hitting. Francisco Lindor is completely lost. They're not hitting home runs, and they should have one of the best offenses in the league. So somebody's paying the price.
If Lindor was hitting 263 as opposed to 163, if he was hitting 363, would they have made this change? It's a rhetorical question. I think you would agree with me.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Like, is this one guy? Did Chili Davis and his assistant get fired because of one guy, or is it because the whole team has been struggling? I don't know what you heard on that front, but yeah.
Well, yeah, and I guess the great unknown in this whole thing is, you know, Joel Sherman was the first to report that Steve Cohen, the new Mets owner, has had dinner now with multiple players. We heard about the, you know, the conversation with Francisco Lindor before he signed that 10-year, $341 million deal. But he apparently is breaking bread with other players. And I can tell you, having covered George Steinbrenner and the Yankees, that's not always a good situation.
Hey, look, and remember how Steve Cohen made his money on Wall Street, where one decision can cost you tens of millions, or with his wealth, hundreds of millions in one day. So is this guy going to have the patience to be the owner of a Major League Baseball team? And 1 month into this run, the answer is no.
So the Mets front office may have blown it by not firing Chile in the offseason. I may have blown it by predicting that the Dodgers would be the greatest team of all time. Okay. Should I give up on that prediction?
I know we got ripped by some fans for bringing this up last week. Well, now they're 4-12 over their last 16 games. Yeah. Dustin May's out for the year. They've hit 206 over that 16-game stretch. So, no, they're not going to be one of the all-time great teams. That road now is too much to overcome. Yeah, they're still an 89-win pace, but to win 114 like the 98 Yankees or 116, yes, I got to mention the 0-1 Mariners again, it's not going to happen. Could they still win 100? I don't know. Without May, and depending on when you get Tony Gonsolin and David Price back, 100 might even be pushing it. So, great team, yes. All-time great, no. I don't think they're going to get there.
I would say this, and not in relation to the question of whether or not they're going to be an all-time great team. I think we have to remember about the Dodgers. They're the only team over the competitive balance tax already. And so when we get to midseason and what appears to be a great buyer's market develops, because you only have a 10-team playoff field, and I think a lot of teams are going to throw their hands up and say, we're done. We're out. We're going to try to sell players. The Cubs might be the first team to do that. I feel like the Dodgers clearly are going to be buyers. So if they have depth issues in their bullpen, in the rotation, wherever, they have the capital to go and address the thing. And unlike the Yankees, who may not go over the CBT threshold and may not necessarily be able to take on a lot of money, I think the Dodgers are going to take on whatever they need.
Yeah, and remember, too, May's injury, you know, hurts that flexibility on how you use those guys in the playoffs. So that only reinforces the idea that they'll probably go out and get a reliever or two. I know it's early to talk trades. I'll throw out Pirates reliever Richard Rodriguez, who's probably been the best closer in baseball. He's retired 28 batters in a row. You don't think the Dodgers could use a guy like that at the back end, you know? So, yeah, I'm with you. Bullpen is certainly the one area they're going to eventually be looking at.
All right, in Kansas City last night, you had the Indians, you had the Kansas City Royals, and this is what happened.
So Perez is going to stay on first. The run's going to count. Benintendi's out.
Wait, where's Benintendi going?
He's out.
No. Wait a minute.
Did we just see him?
Here's Angel Hernandez in the middle of an absolute disaster emerging here.
Matt, you're
right. Cannot
let
Benintendi go to third base. He's out.
Yeah, he should be out. Nobody caught the ball.
You're right. It's hard to see. But for their coaches not to see what happened and for the umpires not to see what's happened,
Tito's going to get thrown out of the game. There's no way you can let this happen if you're Angel Hernandez. This is an absolute debacle. And Tito is letting him know it. You've got to protest this, right? Unless there's some kind of bizarre rule that we don't know about?
Well, look, they got it right on video. You can appeal or challenge that, can't you? I don't know what they're saying, what happened to Benintendi.
We'll find out in a week.
Yeah, so if you listen to that, then you knew everyone was confused about what happened. Here's the bottom line is, Dave, is that Salvador Perez hit a long fly ball out to right center field. The lights from the scoreboard there, sometimes they can, if you're looking out in that direction, you can lose the ball in those lights. The ball actually was never caught. It fell. Andrew Benintendi's running from second to third, and he looks up, and Angel Hernandez, the first base umpire, has called an out. Because he thought the ball was caught out in the outfield. Well, Benintendi winds up being tagged out in between second and third. Angel Hernandez, the interim crew chief, gathers the umpires. They talk about it, and they put Salvador Perez at second, and they put Benintendi at third. And look, because of Angel Hernandez's history, You heard from the announcers. Up there's Angel Hernandez right in the middle of it. I will tell you that after processing everything that went on last night, I'm going to compliment Angel Hernandez here. Okay, you ready for this?
I'm shocked. I watched the replay on that. I guess the bottom line is, thank goodness Cleveland won the game, or who knows what the end result would have been. But yeah, what's the rule book on this? Are you going to explain this to me? I don't know what the call was supposed to be.
Well, the call was supposed to be that there was just no catch, and you know, and the play was supposed to go forward, but Angel thought that the ball was caught and made the out signal. And when he spoke to a reporter after the game last night, you know what he did? He admitted that he was wrong. And yeah. I've been railing on Major League Baseball in recent weeks with instant replay review that they never acknowledge when mistakes are made. Now, I wish I had sound of this Angel Hernandez conversation with a reporter. The pool reporter spoke to him after last night's game. But when you read the transcript of it, he acknowledges he screwed up. He's asked by the pool reporter. So you signal for an out as if the outfielder caught the ball. Correct. And then he's asked, can you walk us through the responsibility of an umpire in your spot on that play just broadly? And then his answer was, exactly what I did is my responsibility as the interim crew chief here. We talked about this and it played out exactly how we rehearsed it when I joined the crew the other day. They decided that, you know what, the call, obviously his call affected what Benintendi did. So they put Salvador Perez at second. They put Benintendi at third. And Angel Hernandez admitted that he screwed up. And he said to the reporter, our goal was to get the play right. And that's exactly what he did. Now, you can argue that Benintendi may have scored otherwise. But generally speaking, I wish a lot of other people would handle their mistakes the way he did last night.
Well, and look, we know we've had several umpiring controversies this year. And you're right. All we want is transparency. Mistakes are going to be made. Would not like to see as many as we've seen this year, that's for sure. But at least he owned up to it. Although, I guess I still don't understand why Benintendi, you know, why he's not allowed to be out. Well, you know,
I think the reason on that was it was clear on replay, and I don't know, I don't think they actually looked at replay, but it was clear on replay that Benintendi himself wasn't sure, like he was holding up to see if he was going to go back and tag up if the ball was caught. So it's not a guarantee. In fact, in some respects, I think, you know, what they did was with the Royals, like, look, we're going to put Salvador Perez at second. We're going to put Benintendi at third, and you guys can live with that, right? In other words, the inning continues.
Yeah, yeah. If you see the highlight, Benintendi, he's kind of tagging up. He goes to third, goes back to second. He's kind of caught in the middle because he didn't know what to do. But, yeah, he was tagged out, so
I think the larger thing is that unlike other, because we've had some calls this year where what we got back was, no, the call stands.
Right. Yeah. We're too deep into the weeds here, you know, and that's the bottom line. And it's just a reminder, you know, that in baseball, it's so complicated and there's so many weird things that can happen, you know, and these weird things can decide games. Again, luckily it didn't last night, but God forbid something like this happens in a playoff game or a postseason game, you know. But maybe they just need to fix that scoreboard in Kansas City. That's the problem, that scoreboard.
So on May 5th, 2021, are you on the bandwagon, the Angel bandwagon with me?
No.
Come on. Taylor, are you with me?
I had a friend send me a text yesterday from his phone, and this was a few days ago, so this was before last night, and he has a friend named Angel Hernandez. He didn't pick up the phone, so it says Angel Hernandez missed call, so he had to send that screen grab. It was kind of an inside baseball joke, I guess.
Taylor, tell me what you think. Are you on the bandwagon today for Angel? I respect the fact that he said I screwed up.
I wouldn't say on the bandwagon. Maybe I'm like slowly jogging behind it, like waiting to get on. It's nice that he admitted he was wrong, but I'm not all in.
Dave's response, I will take that. All right. Thanks for doing this.
All right, Buster.
Jumping into the numbers. This is Himbo Knows on Baseball Tonight.
Hembo, Paul Imbecchiti's researcher at ESPN. He's a honcho on the show Get Up. And Hembo, you were my producer this morning. Is that the title? Like, I was on Get Up this morning and you produced the segment?
That's right. If that makes you feel any better to say it out loud, you are my boss, you are my overlord. That's all correct. That is
No. I was your producer. I looked at it the other way. You're like, this is what you're gonna talk about.
Oh.
You are gonna talk to me about Jacob DeGrom. You were going to talk to me about Mike Trout. And we wound up talking about Jose Altuve. And I mentioned to Greeny that, look, if Jose Altuve makes his speech in Cooperstown, it's guaranteed he's going to get booed, especially because Cooperstown is in New York. What are his chances? Because I look at him, and I've stopped voting in the Hall of Fame. You know my history. I voted for Barry Bonds. I voted for Roger Clemens. I would vote for Jose Altuve, assuming that he builds up some more counting numbers. What do you think its chances are?
It's a fascinating question. The back of the baseball card argument is going to be hit in his favor by the end of his career. I think you and I would agree that as a second baseman to produce the numbers that he will wind up having produced, he should be someone who would likely go in on the first ballot. Obviously, this throws a wrench into the whole conversation because it was blatant cheating. Now, it's a little bit different when it comes from the team level, I think. So my best guess as of now would be that the electorate would penalize him. He certainly will not or would not be elected on the first ballot. But I do think that someday Jose Altuve will get in because he has been somewhat remorseful, at least in relation to some of his teammates. I think the best comparison that I would make, and this isn't the best name to pull out given the news cycle right now, but I think the best comparison to make would be Roberto Alomar, who I will always believe would have been a first ballot Hall of Famer had the spitting incident not occurred. I think that might be more the line for the Hall of Fame voters and less so the Bonds, Clemens, Schilling treatment. What do you think?
Well, and I agree. And we've heard from his teammates what the evidence shows and that he wasn't nearly as involved as a lot of the other guys were. Tony Adams, the Astros fan who went through all those game tapes that he had, I think that's how he did it, counted the number of bangs, and Altuve was getting a lot less help than others. Now, you know how this works. If you're a member of the Black Sox, you might be the eighth most important player in that group, but because you're associated with them, you're banned from baseball. And if you're Jose Altuve and you were on that team and you didn't say anything, there are going to be voters who are going to hold it against him.
Then that's fair. I agree with that. But then, do we include Justin Verlander in that same discussion then?
Right.
I agree. To me, and potentially Garrett Cole, like to me, for Jose Altuve to have to shoulder that load by himself is completely unfair, but that's what history is. It's completely unfair, and history does not do nuance nearly as well as it should, as you well know.
No, and the Hall of Fame voting doesn't. I mean, it's laughable to think, you know, some of the guys who were in the Hall of Fame who people in baseball laugh and they're like, yeah, that guy used steroids. And then Bonds and Clemens are held out because the back of their baseball cards were better than the other guys.
That's exactly right.
I find it to be bizarre, which is why I stopped voting. And as I say, if I were to vote and Altuve, you know, winds up, let's say, with 2,500 hits and those batting titles, et cetera, I absolutely would vote for him. All right. The San Francisco Giants, one of the surprise teams in baseball, maybe internally, they're starting to feel differently about what they're going to do before the trade deadline. What's the secret behind their success?
Right now, they're allowing only 3.5 runs a game. That's the second fewest in the league, but they're doing it with a league average strikeout rate. So I've identified three reasons why the Giants have gotten so good at run prevention. One, they're the only team in the league that throws their off-speed pitches more than their fastballs, believe it or not. And that sets up my second point. They're keeping the ball on the ground 50% of the time, to be exact. That ranks second in baseball, Buster. And lastly, they own the best defense in the sport. The Giants are converting 74% of batted balls into outs. That's the highest rate in the league. So it's a formula that's really working well for them. Look, obviously, you look at the roster, they don't have the most talented group of pitchers or anywhere close to being the most talented group of pitchers, even within their own division. But they've definitely established a game plan early in the season that works for them. And if you can keep the ball on the ground and you can catch it more often than not, you're going to win a lot of baseball games. And that's not going to change no matter how much baseball changes itself.
We got a question yesterday, a Bleacher tweet about Corey Seager's defense. What do you got on him?
Yeah, so he's graded about as a league average defender at shortstop for most of his career, but his numbers so far this season have been pretty ugly. He's -3 defensive runs saved, and he's -4 outs above average. I do expect those, however, to flatline as we go forward. But I do think, Buster, it is reasonable to have a discussion regarding his viability at the position long-term. He's listed at 6'4". That makes him one of the biggest shortstops in the history of baseball. In fact, Cal Ripken Jr. is the only player of that stature to play a full season at shortstop over the age of 30. He moved to third base, obviously, in his mid-30s, but unlike Corey Seager, his glove at shortstop really up until that time was a major asset. I suppose Carlos Correa is also a part of this conversation. As these guys approach free agency this winter, how much of the conversation, how many dollars are at stake regarding whether or not they're going to stay at shortstop or move to the corner of the diamond?
At least some of them, maybe not a lot. Nolan Arenado got paid. Well, that was the Rockies. Never mind. I won't use that example. All right, let's talk about a shortstop who got paid in a big way, Francisco Lindor. What do you see? Because as I've said on the podcast, he looks as bad as any great player I've ever seen.
Buster, before the season began, you invented a brilliant statistic called crush quotient. It measures the total number of bases a player generates for every 100 swings he takes. Francisco Lindor ranks dead last, 76th among 76 qualified players in the National League. Dead last. Now, you might say he's getting unlucky. Sure, his batting average on balls in play is 181. We know that number will gradually rise. But as I said, at the time of his new contract, Lindor has had exactly one great hitting season in his entire career, and he had by far the weakest profile as a hitter among all the guys that signed a mega contract. So obviously he's not this kind of bat, but I don't know that we should ever expect Francisco Lindor to be a genuinely great hitter because he really never has been. Am I off base there?
I think he was a great hitter for a time earlier in his career. But what I really believe, especially after watching him the other day, and you know, we talked on air about his batting practice and how he clearly was looking to jack the ball in the stands. And I remember, you know, watching Lindor in 2016, 2017 saying, this is a really good hitter who is going to, he's going to hit some home runs. I didn't think of him as a home run hitter. In watching him the other day and, you know, sort of watching the process and seeing what he's doing, I think he thinks of himself as a home run hitter. And I think he's got to stop doing that.
I think it's a really good point to make, Buster, and especially after looking a little bit deeper into some numbers this morning, it does look like he's trying to get too perfect a pitch when he's batting. Right now, his swing percentage, his swing rate, just the number of pitches he sees divided by the number of swings that he takes is by far the lowest in his career. So it's almost like he is treating his at-bats like he's a power hitter. He's not content to merely slap a single. He's not even content to go gap to gap. If you're only going to swing in five pitches that you see, we're talking about one of the lowest rates of anybody. We're talking about one of the lowest rates of anybody who's seeing a lot of strikes. So I think your eyes are sort of matching what the numbers say. He's up there looking to do way more damage than he should. When you're in a slump like this, especially a player of his size with his profile, he needs to be looking to go gap to gap and just hit the ball up the middle. What do you think?
Absolutely. You know, in his batting practice, hit the ball through the middle of the field. Mm-hmm. I also think he should work with a performance coach. I had noticed something in watching that being on site the other day. And then, and I saw him play. What was it? When I watched him play, something has stood out to me. And I saw it with Jose Altuve last night at Yankee Stadium. It was actually a point that I remember the late great pitcher Mike Flanagan once mentioned to me. How guys who are struggling and sort of have it in their heads, they try to get off the field as quickly as possible when they don't think they're going to have success. His belief was that when you had on the scoreboard those big numbers, 163, that it was almost in the hitter's head that he wanted to get the numbers off the board. And so I was watching Lindor the other day in that game against the Phillies. He's swinging at the first pitch that's over the plate. It's like, I'm going to, you know, try to put the first pitch in play. I'm going to try to resolve this at bat as quickly as possible. And then when he would make outs, which he was doing on a regular basis in that game, he would sprint off the field. I saw Altuve do the same thing last night, which brings me back to my point about the performance coach. I think that would help him.
That is an interesting dynamic. I mean, you can't go from hitting 160 to 300 overnight. And you can't possibly convince me that the fact that he just signed this big contract to play in New York doesn't have a lot to do with it. I've had several buddies who are Indians fans who have reached out to me and said, this makes me really, really happy that this happened. And this is such a good example of why you can't evaluate players that play in New York in the same way as you do other places. There is a different dynamic, and baseball is a sport that is so finely mental. And look, Francisco Lindor seemed like he had the kind of personality, if anyone could do it, to do it. And we're only a month in, but it's about as bad as it could have possibly been. And I think Steve Cohen in an honest moment would probably be gritting his teeth if you asked him the same question.
Exactly. All right, Hembo, thanks for doing this.
Later, boys.
Get out of here, Hembo. Sick of Hembo. Right.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster, Bleacher tweets for a Wednesday. First up, we have Vincent Hanam at VS Hanam. He writes in, the Twins are 0-6 in extra inning games this season, all seemingly after the bullpen implodes. Is this their main challenge, and do you see it being addressed at the deadline? Peace, a desperate Twins fan.
Yes and yes. And Vincent, I'll encourage you to go back and look at the Washington Nationals in 2019. I want to say they were 10 games under 500 as they got into like around May 22nd. They had statistically the worst bullpen in baseball, and that season ended with the Nationals doing a dog pile after winning the World Series. If you have a part of your team that has issues, the best part of the team to have issues, a bullpen. Like, that can be fixed during the course of the year. And as I was talking about with Dave Schoenfield, I think that there absolutely is going to be a great buyer's market during the year. There are going to be a ton of relievers traded. And so the Twins, if they feel like they're, the rest of their team is good enough, they're going to have opportunities to get better.
The last one for today, not a question, more recognition. I guess it's a question too, but Andrew Stout writes in, at Thomas AC Stout, did Buster lobby to make sure Derek Gould got this recognition? Derek really is the best beat writer in baseball, and he has won, Derek Gould, our friend from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, the Category B beat writing in the 2020 AP Sports Editors Contest. I'm not entirely sure of what the Category B means, but is it official? Is he the best sports writer or beat writer in baseball?
Yeah, he won that award. And I've said on the podcast a number of times, I think he's the best beat writer covering baseball. You know, Susan Slusser covers the San Francisco Giants for the Chronicle. I think she does a phenomenal job. Mark Topkin, our friends, Tampa Bay Times, does an amazing job. You know, a lot of great writers. I think Derek is excellent, and this is well-deserved.
Congrats, Derek. Thanks for writing in, everyone. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter, and please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts.
That's it for today. My thanks to Dave, Hembo, Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, and remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.